Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, what up, everybody? This is Lee from Lee Keys of Evan Real Talk. Tonight we got a packed show. We got a lot to talk about. A lot going down. A lot went down since our last show, and we're gonna recap all the events from this past week, leading into Fight Night Saturday, featuring Robert Whittaker versus Kevin Gastelum. Tonight we're gonna talk about Demetrius Johnson losing last week on one. Also Eddie Alvarez controversial DQ loss, also on one. That first live broadcast of TV event here in the States on TNT. We're gonna ask the question: do we want to see more of one, and what do we like about it? We're not going to talk about the negatives because I think there isn't really anything negative to talk about as of right now, being that we only seen one live event. So we'll just talk about the positives today. But then the talk is going to get real spicy as we talk about the recent spat between Conor McGregor and Dustin Poirier. Leading up to that last fight, they was all chummy and, you know, all that good stuff. But as of the last couple of days, things have actually got a little personal between Dustin and Conor concerning a charitable contribution. We'll talk about that. Kevin Holland, now on a two-fight losing streak. We're going to discuss what needs to happen for him next. I got a couple ideas about what I think he should do. And then lastly, we're going to talk about this weekend's Fight Night card featuring Robert Whittaker and Kevin Gastelum. Yo, what's up, Evan? That's you?
How you doing, man?
Oh, man, I'm good, man. How you doing tonight?
Good. Feeling good. Ready to break it down.
You need to talk up a little bit, Ev.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, bro. All right, man.
You know.
Like I said, we got a packed show. What's on your mind today, bro?
Not too much, man. You know, I'm excited for this weekend, excited for the good fight this weekend, excited to kind of talk about what went down, you know, as you mentioned, with Demetrius Johnson, Kevin Holland, and just, you know, see what we go from there. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, man. Well, let's just jump into it, man. Last week on one first event, you know, they put their heavy hitters out there, Demetrius Johnson and Eddie Alvarez. Eddie was the first fight. He lost via disqualification. What were your thoughts on him being DQ? Fair or foul?
Personally, I did not like the stoppage. I don't think it should have been a DQ loss. You know, there's a lot of controversy behind his opponent kind of turning his head and, you know, just to stop the punches. But then again, who do you blame? Do you blame Eddie? Because were those clear, you know, shots to the back of the head? It's tough with the rules because, you know, that's unacceptable to take a shot to the back of the head. But when we look at Demetrius Johnson, he's on the ground completely defenseless and takes a knee right to the chin. Like, where do the rules kind of make sense? I don't know. I don't even know what to say, honestly.
Me, I'm blaming the ref. I felt if the ref saw that Eddie was hitting him in the back of the head, why not stand him up, issue a warning, and the fight goes on? Being that Eddie was talking back to the ref saying he was hitting him on the ear, then the guy turned his head and boom. So I kind of blame the ref, man. The ref could have stopped this, you know, stood him up, issued a warning, let the fight go on. You know, no harm, no foul. But at the same time, you got to remember Eddie Alvarez, fight against Dustin Poirier when he threw the 6-12 elbow.
Right.
And remember, they stood him up. They stood them up for that. So, but that was in the UFC. So I just think
right.
that the ref basically caused this when he could have prevented it.
I like that. I think that's the perfect thing. It shouldn't have been a disqualification. But you know, I hope they look into that one for Eddie, you know, for the sake of just his all the work he put in and all that. And we go from there. But you know, if I may, moving on from the Eddie thing, let's talk about, you know, Demetrius Johnson. That was a hot topic. That was a hot topic for, you know, for the MMA fans in general. You know, grounded knees. Too many people do not have, like, there's too much division on the, you know, the grounded knees. Should they be legal in all MMA organizations? Is one doing it right? Is UFC doing it right? What are your thoughts on the grounded knee?
Well, let's go back to the Peter Yan Aljamain Sterling fight. The next day or that night, Demetrius Johnson tweeted that you should be able to knee a grounded opponent. And he ended up losing his fight due to him catching a knee flush while he was grounded. Now, that being said, a knee to the face of a grounded opponent, I can't rock with that. I think that's dangerous. Because there's no way for them to defend themselves, really. Now,
mm-hmm.
a knee to the body, the sternum, I could rock with that, you know, because that ain't going to cause as – it could cause damage, but would it cause as much damage as you kneeing somebody in the face? But once again, man, organizations have different rules, and that's one thing about MMA that I don't like. I think the rules should be universal because that way, let's say if you were to go from the UFC to one, the rules are the same. If you was to go from one to Bellator, the rules are the same. If you was to go to Bellator to PFL, the rules are the same. So I think there are certain rules that should be universal, and I think kneeing the grounded opponent in the face, that need to be looked at. Now, to the body, to the sternum, you know, I like I said, I can rock with that. What do you think about the Demetrius Johnson loss?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, I'm very glad that Demetrius is okay. I'm glad that he was able to get up and, you know, be basically totally fine. He was able to do an interview, literally after the fight. He was repeating himself, but I think that's just in the moment. He was a little upset. But in my personal opinion, it's a tough call to make because, you know, the argument is how come, you know, knees to the face are unacceptable in certain promotions, but I can be on top and just smashing elbows down onto someone's skull. Granted, it's not like he's defenseless. He can block himself. So that's where I think the difference is. To me, it's a fight at the end of the day. It is a fight, so it's a tough call to make. But I'd rather not see them, honestly. I really don't like – I didn't like seeing Demetrius Johnson take that knee to the face. It was hard to watch. And, yeah, I got to say it's not
All right, let me ask you this question real quick, Evan.
Ooh.
Was it hard to watch – because you're a big fan of Demetrius, or was it hard to watch because of the act? To me, it was hard to watch because I'm such a big fan of Demetrius Johnson.
I've been a fan of DJ. You know, I've been watching him since, I'm trying to think of the first fight I ever saw of his. It was definitely a mixture, you know, of both, just being sad to see him take that, but also because he was already rocked, he got hit with a clean uppercut, and then he was trying to get back up, and he just takes that knee on the chin, and that's it. So, like, it was just, it was hard to watch for both reasons. But I can't be too upset because, honestly, this is kind of off topic, but it's not necessarily off topic. I was genuinely shocked at the betting odds for that fight after seeing the size difference. Because you saw the size difference. It looked like a featherweight was fighting a flyweight, and it was just absurd. And I don't know if you knew this, but DJ was a minus 1,000 favorite. They had that other guy at a plus 680 underdogs, and, you know, he did that to DJ. Like, it was crazy to see just how high they put DJ's skill set at, and then that happens. But regardless, it was hard to watch either way. I'm not a fan of it. They can keep it out. Just keep it safe. It's a sport. Yes, it's fighting, but it is a sport, and it's got to be televised. It's got to be pay-per-view. No one needs to get, you know, too hurt. I'd rather not see those clean knees to the jaw. That's just me.
Yeah. Do you think DJ won round one, or you think he lost round one?
I think it could be either way. Because it seemed like he was kind of pushing the action, but I think he was definitely pushing the action. I just don't know if he caught him enough, you know, like landed enough significant strikes to win that round. But he was definitely the one, the aggressor, let's say. But it just the reach disadvantage, it was just a significant reach. And I think there was also a power disadvantage, obviously. But what's it called? I don't know. I saw the kid, Adriano Moraes, has said that he'd give DJ a rematch. Since we're on the topic, how do you think a rematch would go?
I think DJ dominates him in a rematch.
You think so?
I think DJ dominates him in a rematch. I think DJ comes out, smothers him, instead of letting him get off. Because the only way DJ can beat him is DJ has to close the space. He has to. He can't let Moraes fight from the outside because of his length. So DJ has to come, smother him, make him fight in tight quarters, take him down. And I think DJ dominates him in a rematch. I'm going off of DJ past performances and rematches where he was always better in his second fight going against somebody, and history tell me he'll be better in his second fight against Moraes. What about you?
It's tough, man. It's tough to say only because my biggest issue was the genuine size. The kid, Adriano Moraes, was so much bigger than DJ, just in everything. Like, it just makes me nervous for DJ. I don't think he should be, you know, like, that's the weight class. They're both 135ers, but that's the problem. DJ's just not a 130. Well, he said with getting older, making 125 is just not going to happen. But, yeah, 135 for him is just tough. He's just not a big dude. And it's the height. The height and reach is his problem. It's not the skill set. And, yes, at sometimes in MMA, skill set, you know, takes over, you know, size and power and all that. Like for example, Izzy versus Costa. They were both kind of in the same height range, but Costa was clearly the bigger fighter in, you know, muscular form, but it was skill that, you know, took out Costa. So maybe in the rematch, DJ can find a way, but I don't know. I'd like to see DJ take a lot of time off, though. That was a disgusting knockout. Don't want to see him for a while. But let's not put too much stock into this topic, and let's you want to talk about Kevin Holland?
Now, let me ask you something about one real quick. Like what you saw? Did you like what you saw on their first televised event? And what did you like about? We're not going to talk about the negatives about the event because me personally, I feel like we didn't see enough to say that it was negative outside me, the referee, and the Eddie Alvarez fight. But what did you like about their first live event?
one of the biggest things that I liked, I don't know if it was just my TV for whatever reason, but when DJ was fighting, there was no commentary. I couldn't hear the commentary, so it was literally just silence from, you know, from the in the, it just, I heard the punches and the ref, and that's all I heard, and that was super cool. I don't like hearing commentary, especially in UFC. They're ridiculous. But in one, I haven't watched enough, but I like the televised event. I like any MMA. I personally, I think one does their production way better than Bellator. You know, they don't drag it out too much. I like that they put on after the DJ fight. There was a, I believe it was a Muay Thai fight after that. And I can't, it's coming on tonight again at 10 o'clock, I believe. There's more than one. It's the lightweight championship. So I can't wait. I'm glad we're talking about it now.
Actually, I liked it. I liked what I saw. I thought it was a good product. They did have commentary during the fight, but they don't dominate the commentary over the fight. Basically, what they want you to do as the fan, they want you to engage in the fight without them. You know, it's limited commentary, which I like you said. But also, I kind of like their camera angles, man. It seemed like, even though that was on regular cable, it seemed like it was like a super HD or something. It was pleasing to the eye. I mean, I was like, wow, this is nice. But the part that I really, really liked, you touched it, but I love that Muay Thai fight. Oh, my goodness gracious. Those guys are beasts. All kicking and punching. No takedowns, mano-a-mano, face-to-face. Oh, my goodness gracious. Those guys are beasts. That was so much fun to watch. Man, yes, I can get into one, and I like their product. And they got one of my favorite fighters on commentary. I want to say Rich Franklin is one of the commentators. So, hey, I'm looking forward to tonight. I'll probably tape it and watch it probably on later. But, yeah, man, that I like what one put on in their first event. So I'm definitely looking forward to the night. But we got to talk about this, man. We talked about it a little bit on our group chat, but we're going to give the people some of our feedback now. So over the weekend, we had Dustin Poirier and Conor McGregor having like a little Twitter spat over a charitable donation that Dustin said he had failed to receive for Conor. Me personally, I don't like this, but I'm going to go ahead and let you go ahead and speak your piece on it.
I didn't like it. Even Dustin came out and said that he took it too far and should not have put out that kind of stuff. You know, that's just not fight stuff. Like, I get it when Conor and Habib fought, they did the whole drama, and it was all for the show, and it went way too far, and look what happened. So it doesn't need to happen for Dustin. He does not need that hanging over his head when he's supposed to be doing a donation thing, you know, the good fight. But it's whatever now. I think it's over now. They're not going to go crazy anymore like that. One thing, though, that bothered me about the drama is when Conor said that he wasn't going to fight Dustin, all of these 155ers coming out the woodwork to announce that I can be ready for July 10th. And it's like, none of you are fighting Conor. Like, just stop. RDA tried. Kevin Lee tried. I forget who else tried, but it's like, you guys do not understand that you're not draws. Like, no one wants to see Conor fight RDA. Sorry, no one cares. Kevin Lee, you haven't fought since you lost to Charles and you tapped out and then tried to complain that you didn't tap out. No one wants to see you fight Conor. Like, that just stuff bothered me amongst the drama that already was going on. But whatever, the fight's going to happen. Stoked for the fight. One thing that doesn't make any sense to me, is Conor still the favorite again? I don't understand that.
Well, you might as well go ahead and be disappointed because, of course, Conor McGregor will be the favorite. That's just his name. It ain't based on his skills or anything like that. It's totally based on his name. So go ahead and be upset. Get it out early. But one thing I would disagree with you on, Evan, is that you said that none of those guys are draws, Kevin Lee or RDA. They don't have to be the draw. Conor is the draw. And they said, I think I read today where the UFC is expecting a full gate at the Conor and Dustin fight. So, but the reason I didn't like this spat, man, is because this is Conor doing a charitable donation. That's business. You get in contact with his people, and y'all talk about it. This is something you don't air out. It's business. It ain't fight stuff. Why bring your charitable organization into fight talk? That just didn't sit well with me. And I said that in the group chat, and I also said it on Twitter also. I just don't feel like there's no room for this when leading up to a fight. But, you know, July 10th should be a great card. I'm looking forward to seeing whether or not Conor makes any adjustments to his game. I put in our group chat, and I know Keys didn't like it. You probably didn't like it either. But if Dustin beats Conor, man, I think that's it, bro. I think that's probably the last that we'll see Conor in the octagon. I think he will go on and, you know, work with Floyd as far as promotion and stuff like that. And I think he'll just get more entrenched into his after UFC life, man. But I know as far as Conor McGregor fans, they don't want to hear that because they think he's going to win this fight. But we'll see what happens on July 10th. If Conor loses, do you think he fights again?
Honestly, probably not. And the only reason I say that is because I think he's already got 5 losses on his record. And I know that's not a lot, but like for Conor, you know, it just didn't, you know, you don't want to just keep adding those losses. You know, it just, there's a legit name, you know, the 3 big losses to Nate, to Beav, and to Dustin. It's not like he's losing to, you know, slacks anymore. And it depends. I think it depends on the loss. If he gets knocked out again, then I don't know if we'll see him again because who's he going to fight that, you know, makes sense? Conor has to be on pay-per-view. It has to be a sellout crowd. Obviously, before it wasn't because of COVID, but now with us getting back to where we were, they're selling crowds out. So it's too tough for Conor. He's got to be on pay-per-view. He's got to be in a big fight. Like, he's not allowed just to go on a fight night and have a 3-rounder. So I don't know. I don't think he can I don't know how much longer he can keep this up. How much passion do you truly have for this sport after, you know, if back-to-back losses happen? I don't know. I hope he wins. I hope he gets it back because for my own selfish reasons, I would love to see Michael Chandler versus Conor McGregor. But that's just me. Question.
Thank you. I think that's what the UFC is angling for. I think even if Conor loses, they might still angle towards McGregor versus Chandler. What they will probably do is have Conor fight one fight at 145, and if he wins it, put him in there against Chandler. So I could see them doing that, although I wouldn't like that, but I could see that happening. But like you said, it all depends on how he loses. If he gets knocked out, I definitely see him walking away. So But now, man, we got to talk about our boy, man. Me and you were high. Not were high. We are high on Kevin Holland. He lost Saturday to Vettori in the same fashion he lost to Derek Brunson. And he needs to work on his game. Like I said, when we found out he was going to be taking Till's place, I thought it was bad. I thought he should take time off, work on weak parts of his game, and get better. And lo and behold, he get in there and loses the exact same way that he lost to Brunson. What are your thoughts on Kevin Holland? What do you think should be next for him?
I still think Kevin Holland is a great fighter. Can he be a champion at 185? I don't think so. He's got to work the wrestling if he's going to stay at 85. If he wants to go to 170, I think it's going to be a lot different. I would appreciate him giving 170 a chance because he's not that big of a guy. He said it. He barely cuts any weight. He consistently weighs in at 183. When he fought Marvin, I believe Marvin was probably like 205, 210, where Holland was maybe 195. Like, it's just a size event. You can see the size. The builds are different. I don't like it for Kevin Holland anymore. I would like to see him go to 170. And I think he can do big there. If the weight cuts too much, that's fine. But he has said he believes he can make it. I would like to see him give that a chance. There's plenty of great fights at 170, and it makes sense for the betterment of his career. You know, don't keep trying to fight these guys at 185 because they know what they're going to do. They're just going to take you down and lay on you. They're not going to open guard. They're not going to do much damage. They're just going to lay on you and cruise to a five round decision because they just don't care to, you know, get that finish, but also he doesn't really try to get up, or he can't. And if that's the case, you're too small for 185.
Man, I want to agree with you so bad about him moving down to 170. I just don't see him being able to cut that weight, man, especially with him walking around probably closer to 185 than 170. I think the weight cut might be too much, Evan. Me personally, I think Holland needs to take time off and train. He needs to get back, let his body heal up, rest up, you know, catch up. Let your body do all that. And then you need to work, probably go to DC and them gym to work on your takedown defense and your scramble game. Because as long as fighters know that you can't do that, guess what they're going to do? They're going to take you down. So, and I think at 170, he definitely don't want to go down there. Kobe can wrestle. Usman wrestles. Who else down there? Leon Edwards got some ground game. We know Nate can fight on the mat. So there are guys at 170 that's not just going to stand and bang with them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I just think that he needs the time off and start concentrating on the weak parts of his game, just like Greg Hardy has done. After Greg Hardy lost, he's been off, what, almost 6-7 months now? 4-5 months, something like that. He's been off for a little while. And I'm quite sure that what he's working on is when he gets taken down, getting back to his feet, his scramble game, because that's the weakest part of his game. And to Holland can rectify that, we'll keep seeing the same fights over and over and over. Because nobody is going to let no real opponent or MMA fighter is not going to play to your strength.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, though, I'm looking at his Wikipedia page for his MMA record. He has made 170 before, a few times now. He missed weight, you know, once or twice, but he has made 170, and he is only 28. My thing, though, because you mentioned wrestlers at 170, Colby Covington, and though, the thing about that, like, situation, though, is, like, say he cuts down to 170, he's felt that the strength at 185. He's felt these big guys and these big, strong guys. I don't know if a guy like Colby Covington, you know, wrestling alone will be able to keep him down. Like, can he hold him down, you know, after, you know, going on the ground with Thiago Santos and Brunson, Marvin Vettori, like these big 185ers? Just some thoughts, but, you know, just throwing it out there. But let's keep it going. What else do you want to break down?
Oh, man. We got the Fight Night card coming up this weekend. But there was something else I want to talk about real quick. It'll probably come to me later. But let's just jump into the Fight Night card this weekend. Main event is Robert Whittaker versus Kevin Gastelum. This fight was supposed to happen a while ago, but Whittaker got ill on the day of the fight, and they had to cancel the fight. So Kevin Gastelum is actually – is he replacing somebody?
Yes, Costa. He's replacing Costa.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, man, on this card, we got the co-main event, Jeremy Stephens versus Dracar Close. We got Andre Arlovski on this card taking on Chase Sherman. Al Hoffman versus Malcolm. I don't know those guys. I think I said Al Hoffman fight. I don't really know too much about this Malcolm. Then we got the always exciting Luis Pena on this card. Then on the prelims is headlined by the gorgeous Tracy Cortez taking on Justine Kush. And Jessica Penn is on this card. So this card, Gerald Meerschaert is on this card too. So This card is actually pretty good. It's the way a Fight Night card should be set up. Me and you agree on this fact, that on Fight Nights, you should have your up-and-coming fighters. You should have your up-and-coming fighters being highlighted. But the main event should be between either two top 10 guys or two top 15 guys or girls. So this card is set up like that. So, you know, we can get to grow and learn who some of these fighters are. And we get to see them in the early stages of their career. So let's jump into it, man. What you want to talk about? The co-main, the main event, or the whole main card?
We'll definitely break down most of the main card. But on the prelims, as you mentioned, you know, there's Tracy Cortez, but below her is a great
Romanoff.
I believe it's a heavyweight. Yeah, Romanoff and what's his name?
Juan Espino.
That's a really good fight because Romanoff, undefeated fighter who's got some solid wins in the UFC, two submissions as far as I can see, and Juan Espino hasn't lost in a long time, so that's a really good fight. I know that's not much of a breakdown, but it's a great fight, and the fans definitely watch that one. And then obviously the Tracy fight, I can't wait to see her compete because she doesn't fight as active as I would like. Moving on, though, the Luis Pena fight is always cool to watch. He's always interesting. He doesn't really put on boring fights. A big note to have here is the middleweight fight with Abdul Razak Al-Hassan versus Jacob Malkin. Abdul actually is a 170er, but he has not found great success at 170 recently. He's on a two-fight losing streak. In his last fight, he was knocked out stiff. He's taking a chance at 185. He actually missed weight for both of his last fights. So this is why the change at 185. Now to his opponent, Jacob. Jacob actually fought. He actually, I believe, trains with Robert Whittaker, and he fought Philip Paws and was knocked out in the first round. So it's questionable, you know, coming in against a guy like Abdul with that massive power. You know, I'm hoping he can actually show some skills in this fight. But for just for the sake of it, I hope Abdul gets the fight. I hope he can come away with a win, honestly.
And one thing about that is the UFC will make you go up in weight if you fail to make weight. They'll let you miss weight one time, but if you miss weight twice, your next fight you will be going up in weight. So this could be make or break for him. But you know, looking at his profile picture, man, he got a nice body on him. So I don't understand, you know, why he isn't as good as he, I guess I should say, look. So, But look, man, let's jump into it. The opener of the main card is Ricardo Ramos versus Bill Argeo. Argeo is 14-5 and is a -120. Ramos is a +100.
I want to cut you off. I'm going to cut you off. That fight is not happening. Ricardo was pulled due to COVID protocol.
Okay. So who they moving up? Or they just going to leave it as a five fight?
I think they'll just leave it as a five.
Main card. Okay, cool. All right, man, let's jump to it.
We could get lucky with some Gracie come up, but you never know.
Nah, because they normally don't like to move the prelim main event.
Yeah.
All right, man, Luis Pena, always exciting, versus Alexander Munoz. We got 8-3 Pena, 6-1 Munoz. Pena is a -150, and Munoz is a +125. Pena has a 3-inch reach advantage and a 4-inch, 10, 11, 12, 10, 11, 1. Man, he got like a 5-inch, 6'3" to 5'9". That's substantial height advantage. That's like DJ and Maurice almost.
Yeah, no,
so we got 6'3" going against 5'9". Yeah. So what you see in this fight?
What's his name is Munoz is a wrestler. I don't know if a lot of people really know him. He's only got 7 pro fights, but he was on the Contender Series and he fought Nick Newell. Nick Newell, for those who don't know, he has only one arm. I don't know the reason behind what happened to his other arm, but he's a solid MMA fighter who was given a shot on the Contender Series, but of course they gave him a guy who's just going to wrestle him. They didn't give him the shot. But moving on, Munoz was in the UFC. He's got one win of the UFC. He fought Nasserat. I can't say his last name, so I'm not even try. In this fight, I honestly just see Munoz trying to take Pena down. Pena's going to try to keep him at range. But Pena, he's just a 50-50 guy. I just can't really, say he's going to win something, because you would assume, you know, a 6'3 lightweight should be smoking these fools, but it's just not working out for him. But we'll see. I'm going to go with Pena. I'll take him. I'll be stupid. I'll take him. But I don't know. It's a tough one.
One thing about Pena is he's slick. He's a slick striker. He's good on the mat. So Alexander Munoz is going to have to commit. He's going to have to commit to something in this fight. Whatever he commits to, he got to stick to it. If he commits to wanting to take him down and keep it on the mat, stick with that game plan. If he want to stand and bang, commit to that game plan. I don't think you want Pena being able to go to his full bag of tricks. So I'm with you. I'm going to take Pena in this one because I don't know enough about Munoz. I'm going to say Pena wins a unanimous decision.
I think it's a good pick.
All right, next. Go ahead.
No, just saying, just a good pick. Just to say, we went over the – we didn't really go over it, but we just talked about the next fight, Abdul versus Jacob. I'm just going to say it right here. I'm going to take Abdul. I think he's going to do the same thing that Philip Hawes did, and he'll just knock this guy out. And if he doesn't, dude might get cut. I mean, three losses in a row, and if you're not like Cowboy or Connor, it's just you're not staying. So I'll take Abdul by KO. If it's not a KO, I don't know.
I like Abdul in this fight too because he's fighting for his UFC career right now. Sometimes a desperate fighter actually puts on a hell of a performance. And him coming up to 185, maybe that'll help him out a little bit. But I'm going to take Abdul in this fight. I think he wins a split decision. But if he was a knockout Mokon, would I be surprised? But I'm going to say he wins a split decision. Next up, we got Andre Arlovski taking on Chase Sherman. Everything is close in every other department except the weight. Chase Sherman is almost 10 pounds heavier than Arlovski. Arlovski is a 125 favorite, and Chase Sherman is plus 105. Who do you got?
What's interesting about this one, what's interesting about Andre Arlovski, you know, he suffered a few losses back in 2016 to 17. He was knocked out and then with one submission. But he was knocked out by top talent. He got knocked out by Stipe, Alistair, and Francis. Like, you know, they thought his chin was done. He thought it was over. But then he was able to put together two wins against relative talent, dropped two losses, but didn't get knocked out. You know, everything here and there, picked up some wins, losses. So he's coming in on a loss. You know, he's reached 50 pro fights, 30 and 20, and two no contests, regardless. He's coming off a, you know, submission loss to Tom Aspinall, an up-and-comer, to where Chase Sherman is actually on a four-fight win streak. Only one of them is in the UFC. The other three were outside the UFC. But it's just an interesting fight. I'm going to take Chase Sherman. You know, this is his second stint in the UFC. He got fired. He went on three losses. He got knocked out twice and lost a decision. You know, three straight losses, so it's just they had to let him go. But he picked up three big wins, and now he's back. And in his return fight, he got a knockout. So I'm going to pick Chase Sherman I'm going to say decision. It's only a three-round fight. But I think his hands are going to look crisp. I think he's going to come in a little bit lighter than 250. I just think that just sounds so big, and he doesn't look like that big of a guy. I know he's a heavyweight, but, yeah, I'll take Chase Sherman by decision.
Oh, man. I'm going to go with the veteran, man. I'm going to go with Andre Arlovski, dog. I don't know why I'm going with Arlovski. Because I think I picked him last fight because he was the vet. And I think he lost. Yeah, he lost to Aspinall via submission. And I picked him to beat the up-and-comer. And I'm picking him again to beat another up-and-comer. Normally heavyweights win by knockout. So I'm going to say Arlovski, second round knockout. But as you can tell, I'm kind of reluctant in picking him. So, yeah. But I'm going to take Arlovski, man, second round knockout.
That's a good pick. Good pick. It's 50-50 with Andre. It really is.
I know, man.
You take your chances. You know, he's not a spring chicken anymore. But, you know, it's not like he's getting beat badly. Moving on, we've come to the co-main event. We got Jeremy Stephens taking on Jakar Close. Big important factor in this fight. This is Jeremy's first fight back at 155 since, let me just take a second to find out. His last fight at 155 was, give me a second, I apologize. His last fight at 155 was 2012. Okay, ever since then, I believe he's been at 140. Yeah, he's been at 145 because he took on Darren Elkins, Swanson, Oliveira, Bermudez, Holloway, so on and so forth. So this is his first fight at 155 in a long time. He is not looking good right now. He is on a four-fight losing streak, along with, you know, a no contest, but that was due to the eye poke. You know, he's got losses to Aldo, Zabit, Yair, and most recently was the Calvin Kattar knockout. Jakar Close, he is coming off, you know, the KO loss to Benil Dariush, and that was kind of a, you know, that's getting highlighted a lot. You know, recently. So, you know, he's coming in to get that stain, you know, get that bad taste out of the mouth. But for this fight, I'm taking Jeremy Stephens. I encourage everyone that listens to go watch Stephens' interview on the Mac Life YouTube channel. It was a really good interview. He actually gets really, like, open about what's going on in his life and how he feels. And just it really made me, you know, I have to root for him. It just inspired me to root for him, and I hope, you know, he has a great performance. I'm going to say decision. I don't see a finish in this one. I think we're going to see a nice fight, just a casual, you know, decision win. I'm going to take Jeremy Stephens.
I'm looking at his record, and I see a lot of red L's up here.
Yep.
But one thing about his L's, they are to quality guys. Cuz Swanson, Charles Oliveira, Max Holloway, Frankie, Renato Mocano, Jose, Yair, Zabit, Calvin Kattar, Eve Edwards, Donald Cerrone, Anthony Pettis, Melvin Gilliard. Those are the guys he lost to. Man, Gleison Tavao, Joe Lozon, Spencer Fisher. But he does have a win over RDA. Like you said, Darren Elkins. Oh, man, a win over Josh Emmett and Gilbert Melendez. So, he has fought the who's who, basically, in MMA. He's fought a lot of top guys. But when I see all these L's on his record, it gives me a cause to pause. But do we look at Jakar Close as a name? Is he a name compared to all the other guys Stevenson fought? I would say no. That being said, he beats everybody that's not a name. So, man, I want to pick Jeremy Stephens so bad, dog. I'm not going to pick Jeremy, man. I'm going to go with Jakar Close, man. Jakar Close with a split decision over Jeremy Stephens, who will be very game in this fight, as he probably knows that if he doesn't win this fight, he most likely will not be in the UFC. So I'm going to go with Jakar Close, although my heart says Jeremy Stephens.
I get it. Trust me. I get it. And it makes sense to go that way. But I gotta root for Jeremy. That interview got me. But regardless, it's gonna be a good fight, and I'm excited to come to the main event because I'm gonna say it. We got Robert Whittaker taking on Kelvin Gastelum. You know, some things to point out about this fight. Robert Whittaker, since losing the championship to Izzy, He has fought Darren Till in a unanimous decision, 5 rounds, and he basically dominated Jared Cannonier for a 3-round fight. That absolutely shocked me. I really thought he was going to do a lot better in that fight. But, yeah, ever since losing, he's looked great. And the fact that a lot of people miss is he, you know, he's just turned 30. You know, he turned 30 last year. He's still a young dude, you know, evidently hitting his athletic prime, as some would say, to whereas Kelvin Gastelum has not been successful in his, you know, last few fights. He just picked up a win against Ian Heinisch in a decision win. But prior to that, he lost to Jack Hermanson, Darren Till, in a horribly boring fight, and then the incredible war against Israel Adesanya. So he's back in the win column. It's great to see. And I'm going to say it. I'm taking Kelvin Gastelum by knockout. Boom.
Wow.
Said it. Said it. Now. Now. Let me explain. All right. When back when they were supposed to fight at UFC 234, I was picking Kelvin Gastelum. I genuinely think Kelvin was going to win that fight. And I was so upset that they didn't fight. And now they're going to fight, and I think this makes perfect sense. You know, Kelvin stepping up, he's getting that fight back, the one that went away. Kelvin's got that power in that left hand. This is clearly going to be a striking fight. I really don't think Rob's going to try and take him down, and I think Kelvin actually might have better wrestling than Rob. So I think we're going to primarily see a striking fight. Obviously, I'm probably wrong, but I think Kelvin has more power in his hands at 185 than Rob does. I know that's probably iffy, you know, but, oh, man, I see it. I see it in my freaking head, man. I really see Kelvin just knocking him out. It's crazy, but, you know, tell me your thoughts. How you feeling?
I definitely don't feel the way you feel. You know what, Evan, man? I kind of feel you that Kelvin Gastelum, every time you want to count him out, he does something amazing, something that you don't see coming. The Izzy fight, everybody was all high on Izzy. Kelvin Gastelum, basically, if he would have went full bore on Izzy when he hurt him, he would have won that fight. I thought he made a mistake by not rushing in. I thought he made a mistake. I think that cost him the fight. Yeah, why would you go for a takedown when the guy's hurt?
Trust me, that forever pisses me off.
Yeah. So, I like Whitaker, man. I think Whitaker has been on such a tear since losing to Izzy. And he has a laser focus right now of getting his belt back or being in a championship fight against Izzy. And I see Kelvin Gastelum being a roadblock to Robert Whittaker. I see Whittaker winning a unanimous decision in a very tough fight. I think Whittaker gets rocked in this fight by Gastelum. And I see Whitaker adjusting his game plan and fighting more at range using kicks and jabs and maybe a couple takedowns. So I'm going to go with Robert Whitaker, man, in a unanimous decision and a very tough fight, a very entertaining fight against a very game Kelvin Gastelum. I think this fight will live up to the billing. Actually, I am worried about Kelvin Gastelum knocking out Whitaker because Whitaker does tend to drop his hand sometimes, and recently he's been swinging, punching very, very wide and wild. When you punch wild and wide, your opponent can see the punch coming, and they have enough time to react and counterpunch. So this fight, would I be Would I be mad if Gastelum won? No. I like Kelvin Gastelum. And like I said, he always does something when you least expect it. But I'm going to take Whitaker in a unanimous decision, keeping his eyes and his fight game laser focused on the rematch with Izzy Adesanya. Robert Whitaker, unanimous decision. Man, that's really tough, man.
Like, I just don't know what else to, you know. It's a 50-50 fight. Like, I know people want to say that Whitaker's dominating, but I don't see that. I don't see Whitaker dominating Gastelum, even after, you know, but Kelvin hasn't been losing to, like, crap talent. That's the problem. People always do that. They always think, and it's the same thing with winning, too. Like, people get the misconception that because someone's on a big streak, that means they're, like, ready for the top talent. Like, for example, you know, if we got a little bit more time, I think this is a great point that I'm about to make. So when Jeremy Stephens was on a little bit of a rise, he fought Gilbert Melendez and put on a great performance, leg kicked the crap out of him. After that, he was given a main event against Du Ho Choi, and he knocked out Du Ho Choi in the second round, okay? Another great performance. Then he got the main event against Josh Emmett, and he felt some adversity and, you know, fought it and then came back and knocked out Josh Emmett. Okay, three-fight win streak. Everyone thought he was going to go great. So what happens? They give him Jose Aldo, and he gets knocked out by a body shot. It just didn't happen. Okay, let's try that again. Gives him some beat. What happens? Not much of a very fun fight, but loses unanimous decision. All right, what's next? Yair Rodriguez gets whooped. Next, Calvin Cater. It didn't work. I don't like when they put too much stock in a win streak, and then when he actually fights that top talent, it does not go his way whatsoever, okay? But now on to Kelvin Gastelum. Yes, he suffered some losses, but as we just talked about it, those losses are legit. Jack Hermanson, Darren Till, and Izzy. Izzy's the champion. Darren Till, you know, he was supposed to fight Marvin, but he got hurt, but, you know, still one of the top guys in the division. Jack just fought Marvin for 5 rounds, also one of the top guys in the division. You know, they fed him Ian Hynes, and what did he do? He had a great performance, basically dominated him, in my opinion. So I think this is a great opportunity for Kelvin. I can't wait, and, yeah, just wanted to get that out there.
Let's talk about one more thing. Let's go over to Bellator. We got Vadim Nemkov, who I think is the light heavyweight champion, fighting Phil Davis this weekend.
Yeah.
How you feel about that fight?
I actually think that's a rematch, I believe. It is a rematch. They actually fought once before. I'm trying to find it. Trying to find out who won that fight. I believe it was Nemkov, but I'm not absolutely sure. Nemkov won a split decision, but that guy is legit. Only 28 years old, has only 2 losses, and one of them was to Yuri Prochazka, who is now in the UFC. So you already know how legit that guy is. I'm gonna take Nemkov, and I hope it's a fun fight because, not for nothing, but every time I watch Phil Davis, or at least I hear his name, I don't get excited. Like, I just don't remember the last time I've seen him in a fun fight. And I know it's terrible to say, especially looking at his record. He's got a bunch of TKO wins. I don't know, but I will definitely tune in to watch that because I'll watch any MMA.
Man, every time that you start to fall in love with Phil Davis, he lets you down. Every time you start falling in love with Phil Davis, he lets you down. And I think this is another fight where he's going to let you down. I think that's one of the reasons why he went to Bellator. is because, you know, he was expected to be something that I think he's not, and that is a champion. I think Phil Davis is one of these guys that has the skills to be a champion, but I don't think he has the will to be a champion. I think Nemkov beat him again. Last time Phil lost to him was via split decision, and that was November of 2018. So, I'm going to go with Nemkov, man. Unanimous decision over Phil Davis, and he basically beats Phil Davis in a stand-up fight because everybody know Phil Davis is a world-class wrestler and barely has hands. So I'm going to take Nemkov winning this fight. Great show tonight, Evan. We talked about a whole lot. Just to recap the audience, we talked about Demetrius Johnson upset loss last week in the one championship. First live broadcast TV event on TNT. We talked about the Eddie Alvarez DQ loss. We talked about what we liked about one championship. And by the way, they're having a card tonight, 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. We talked about the Dustin versus Connor Twitter spat over charitable donation. Me and Evan talked about what's next for Kevin Holland. Evan thinks he's moved down to 170. I think he needs to expand his camp and focus on his takedown defense, scramble game, and probably incorporating a little wrestling into his own game. And then we just made our predictions for Robert Whittaker and Kevin Gastelum. Evan has Gastelum winning via knockout. I have Robert Whittaker winning via unanimous decision. Any last words, Evan?
No, man. Just great show as always, you know. Always a blast to get on here, break it down. You know, it's just fun to do it. You know, can't wait for the next one. Can't wait for the fight this weekend. And, yeah, just stay happy, everyone. That's it.
Yes. You know, it's always fun to jump up here, talk MMA, talk combat sports. You know, got to talk about one of my favorite fighters, Demetrius Johnson, even though he lost. I'm still very high on Kevin Holland. Just need to see him make some improvements in his game. He might take Evan's advice and go down to 170, although I think he needs to take my advice and just work on some things, probably put on some weight, you know, and become a true 185er. And what I mean by a true 185er is you weigh more than 185 on fight night, whereas your opponent's going to come in there close to 190, 195, maybe 200, and you come in around 190. So he might just need to put on some weight and become a true 185er. But, hey, everybody be safe out there. Still practice social distancing. The virus is still out there. Not going to tell you to get a vaccine or not. That's your own personal decision. Me and Evan signing out for the night. And like I always say, positive people with positive energy yield positive results. Lee, Keys, and Evan Real Talk signing off. And as always, in closing, peace.